This is the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media in association with KBB Birmingham 2020.
Welcome to the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast from Taylist Media. I'm Managing Editor Andy Davis. Now, today we're looking at an area of kitchen and bathroom design that perhaps doesn't get discussed as much as it should, and that's lighting. Get it right and it can lift your designs even higher. Get it wrong and it can flatten them like a pancake. I went over to the John Cullen Lighting Showroom on the King's Road in Chelsea here in London to meet up with Design Director Luke Thomas, and I roped in Helen Fuster from Sooner Interior Design along the way too. This is such an interesting area of design, and Luke and Helen are really insightful and honest here, so I hope you enjoy it. Now, before we get stuck into that, a quick reminder that the Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast is brought to you with the help of our very good friends at KBB Birmingham 2020. It is, of course, the biggest kitchen, bedroom and bathroom show in the UK, and it's on from March the 1st to the 4th at the NEC in Birmingham. We'll be there recording live versions of this podcast, but don't let that put you off. Register your place now at kbb.co.uk. But back to lighting, and I'll hand over to Helen and Luke to introduce themselves, and I'll see you on the other side.
I am Helen Fuster. I am one of two co-owners of Sooner Interior Design, and Sooner is a business-to-business interior design consultancy that works predominantly with residential house builders, even though we do sort of spur off into little other sectors sometimes.
I'm Luke Thomas. I'm the design director at John Cullen, and we deal with everything that's luxury lighting design, basically, mostly high-end residential, but a little bit of commercial projects as well.
Well, this episode is all about lighting, but I'm actually going to start with you, Helen.
Oh, okay.
Because as the designer here, the actual person who comes up with the projects, where in your process do you think lighting sort of comes in your order of service?
It probably is a little bit further down the line. I think we tend to look at the full interior package. So you are looking at finishes and things that furnish the actual architectural space first. So flooring, wall coverings, then we go into the kitchen and the bathroom design. And often that is where you start thinking about lighting. But the aesthetic is immediately on the physical hard structure of the space. And then you look at how you can integrate the lighting into that, how you can use that to enhance it. It's often with working with property developers, you are also sort of trying to look at where the best area is to spend the budget that you have. So you have to be very clever with the lighting to sort of make sure that when you're using it in a way that really enhances the overall look.
So does that sound pretty familiar, Luke, of where lighting falls in for the room designer as opposed to specifically the lighting designer? I would bet my house on the fact that you're not going to say that lighting design
should be the first thing you think of.
But you know, where is that pretty typical, and do you think that is in the right place in the process?
I think for the industry that you're dealing with, which is the developers, then that sounds about right, because it's not the highest thing on the priority. Like when you walk into the space, probably the first thing you're going to see is the kitchen, and so that's where you want to spend the main budget. I'd be interested to know what sort of budget that you get allocated for lighting.
You don't often get a specific allocation at all. What you get is a budget for the different areas, and then you have to integrate that into it. And also, I mean, I'm being very specific to the interior, like the residential home. I mean, we look at a lot of communal area spaces. So when you start getting into things like concierge areas or gyms or cinemas, then actually the light, especially something like a cinema, where ultimately you lose all your lighting, but you need that sort of atmospheric lighting, and you need to sort of create that sort of more specific look. You can potentially be a bit more creative and a bit more interesting, and you certainly have, because it's like a one-off cost to kit out those areas, you often have a bit more money to be able to splurge on things like the lighting. But I wouldn't say it's certainly not a sort of forgotten area. It's not if you're doing it right. I think you have to make sure that you think about it, not necessarily to the same level you can with an individual's residential home, especially if you're looking at more of a high-end product. So I think we are coming at it from maybe slightly different ends of the spectrum.
As you walk into some of these new build properties and you see the classic developer grid of downlights on the ceiling.
Absolutely. You know? And I think that's, but I mean, we're talking about a situation where a developer has actually gone out to an interior designer to work with, and that's not always the case at all. You know, there's a lot of developers out there that have a fairly standard product and don't necessarily need to go to that level. And we like to think that we're giving the developer that little bit of an upper edge, you know, on their competitors by actually working with us and thinking about things.
But this
like
is
that.
What I find, why I find the subject so interesting. The way technology has moved on and the way that lighting has advanced, it can become such a theatrical part of the design, particularly if you're in developments where you've got to have a show home. You know, people have got to be wowed when they walk in the room, and lighting can play such a massive part in that.
It can, yeah, but I don't think the lighting... I mean, there's decorative lighting, which should catch your eye, but the technical and architectural lighting, actually, the main purpose of that is to enhance the interiors, or, in a more traditional building, enhance the architecture of the space. So it can make a ceiling feel higher, it can make a narrow corridor feel wider, and you can really, you know, make a big impact with the lighting. And I think sometimes, or at least historically, that hasn't been recognised. I didn't answer your previous question, actually, which was when should you think about lighting? You should be considering your furniture layouts, your kitchen, you know. If I don't know what we're lighting, then, you know, how do I know which lights to use and where to position them to highlight features within the room? Because ideally I want you to come into a space and see the kitchen being nicely illuminated, and that should catch your eye, or should be a piece of artwork on the wall which draws your attention. You shouldn't come in and think, oh, look at the lights on the ceiling. You know, that's a bad lighting design. We're there to enhance what the interior designer does.
We'll take kitchens and bathrooms in turn here. And I guess this is the question you probably hate, but it is the best way to sort of kick the conversation off with. Where do people go wrong when they light their kitchens? Or when a kitchen designer does the lighting in a kitchen? Is it literally just a grid of lights in the ceiling? Is that like the
Yeah, that's classic? Quite a typical thing, is, you know, just having that even spacing of downlights. You know, some people think, oh, kitchen, yeah, it's got to be bright, so we'll go for slightly cooler colour LEDs. We may not even have a dimmer. We're just going to have, you know, loads of lights in the ceiling. But actually, your kitchen is more often part of your living space and your dining area, so it needs to be sympathetic to that. You need to have control of the lighting so you can adapt it to different occasions. So when you're dining, you don't want your kitchen on full brightness, but you don't want it off either, so you need to have adaptability, and you need to have the light focused onto areas where you're going to be performing tasks. So over the kitchen island, under the work surfaces, because you're using sharp knives, you need to see what you're doing, and you don't want shadows. And you also need maybe another layer of light in there which complements the nice soft atmospheric effect you're trying to create while dining. So maybe a glow under the island bar, have the under cupboard lights circuited separately, so you could turn off the down lights and then have, you know, just a subtle glow of light from the kitchen.
I think that's a really key part, is actually being able to use the different lights at different times for different functions. I mean, that's, you know, when you're thinking about lighting, you have to think, I mean, you obviously know this, but you have to think about what the purpose of that lighting is. Sometimes it can be purely aesthetic to create feature. Sometimes it has to be there for tasks to be able to make sure that you, like you said, in terms of lighting the surface, so you just makes it more safe and easier to be able to work in the kitchen. And then there's other things, like you say, in terms of creating an atmosphere or mood in the room. And that's the same with bathrooms. You know, there's a functional, sorry, I'm sort of jumping from one to the other, but with bathrooms, I mean, we're often looking at making sure that there's a secondary light in the bathroom that you can turn on, that's quite a light, low level light, so that if people are getting up in the middle of the night to use the bathroom, they don't have to put the big bright headlight on, and it's sort of just much more comfortable in terms of using the space. And that's obviously the real key thing, I think, with anything to do with design. It's not just about creating something that as a snapshot looks great, it's about making sure that you're considering how it's physically being used by the end user, and making it comfortable for that person as well as impressive. Or, you know,
when you're literally getting your piece of paper or your pen or your computer out and you're designing that room, at every point of that journey, should you be thinking, how am I going to light that? Where's the light going to sit in there? Where's the light coming from?
You have to make sure that you know that it's 100% a part of the consideration of the design. I think if you leave it, when I've said it's towards the latter part, that doesn't mean that it's an afterthought. It generally is like looking at the initial functional structure of the space. You know, if you're designing a kitchen, you have to have sufficient amount of workspace. You need to make sure you've got sufficient storage, that you've got all of your appliances in a way that makes it really ergonomic to use. And then you've also then got to think, and how does the lighting work to make those functions work? So as you mentioned, you know, if you've got a cooking area, you want to make sure that you've got directional lighting over that. That generally is integrated into your extractor, you know, which whatever that is, whether it's concealed or a feature. So you've got to think about, you've got that, but then how do you light the rest of the work surfaces? Do you have secondary lighting? Do you have, you can get lighting in handrails and things as well now, can't you? Which probably are more for the aesthetic rather than the function. I mean, you can you need to light a handrail so you can see the handrail, but I mean, I think you generally can see a handrail. It just becomes part of the process. You sort of look at a design in stages, and it just forms part of that.
Yeah, right, because I think one of the reasons why you do see that grid of downlights in these developments, where they're not getting the interior designer to come in and dress it all, is because you're just lighting a space. And what can you do other than a grid of downlights? You could do some architectural features, but unless you know what you're lighting, you can't put in the right light sources to...
Yeah, it needs to be designed as part of the actual... I mean, that's kind of where we're coming from. When we offer our services, we're saying you're not... I think for a sort of general kit out, you often have somebody internally within the developer working on each part of the interior, but quite separately. Mm-hmm. They can be looking at their call-off times, and they generally deal with things as things need to be called off. So they could be looking at their ordering their kitchen at a different time, and they're ordering their flooring, or when they were looking at their doors or their ironmongery or their lighting in the ceiling. So what we offer is a service where we're looking at all of that at a point at the same time, which is then designed in, and then at that point that is then handed over to the developer, and then they've got a cohesive design which they can then call off. I mean, we often inherit the architecture. Mm. So we are working with an existing structure which is already there. So there's certain things potentially we wouldn't be able to do because it hadn't been planned in early enough. But I would imagine with some of your clients, you have that chance to really, when you were talking about lighting the space and lighting the architecture, that's actually a major consideration early on.
Yeah, you can, you know, really bring it to life using some discrete lighting. But yeah, our design process would be, you know, we're working with you, Helen, on a project. We wait for you to come to us with the interior layouts to start with, maybe some elevation so that we can see what's going on. And then we'd have a detailed meeting really probing you and trying to glean information from you about what are the finishes. Are we dealing with reflective floor finishes, or are they honed or matte? What sort of colour palette is it? Where's the furniture going? You know, where are we going to be hanging key pieces of artwork? And how do we envisage an actual resident living in this property and using the space, because we need it to ideally work for them? And then we'd start building up a lighting design around that.
The effect that light can have on colours and finishes, I think, is a really important part of it, because you get that wrong, and the colour that you've chosen meticulously over months' worth of arguing can completely disappear if you've got the wrong light on it. So what's the sort of hints and tips of getting that bit right?
That's largely down to the colour rendering of the light source which you're using, and it's one of the reasons why some light sources are more expensive than others. It's generally, we use a scale called CRI, a colour rendering index, and that's a value out of 100, which basically denotes how well a light source will render colours in relation to a perfect light source like the sun or halogen or incandescent light source. Anything below sort of 85, you'll start to see that a lot of colours become washed out, they become a little bit grey and flat, and also it becomes hard to distinguish between some colours. So I often use an analogy of going to a shopping centre and a clothing store, picking up a jumper, and you're not really sure if it's black, brown, blue or grey, and you have to take it to the window to see the actual colour of it. So that's the poor colour rendering. So you want to go for something 90 or above if you want to see the true vivid colours. And, you know, in the higher end properties where clients have amazing pieces of artwork, or they're choosing fabrics and finishes which they're investing in, they want to see those true colours. And it makes it difficult for interior designers to select and source products. And then actually when they get installed, it looks totally different because the lighting quality is different as well.
It's true. I mean, you have to be really careful with what you're selecting, because what you're picking in your studio could look... I mean, we've even had that at presentations where you've picked something in a studio and you've taken it to presentation, obviously different environment, and you have different lighting, and suddenly you're looking going, well, they look like they match when when we were sourcing them. But I mean, it's something you just have to be really careful of, and you know, you do the whole take it to a window and sort of check it against the natural light. We do that all the time. And you also need to sort of, I mean, we pick Dulux paint colors, and you know, and actually understanding the makeup of the colour you've picked. So if you've got a colour that's been mixed from a green and a whatever, then in certain lights that green might come through. So you have to be careful with that, I think. And when you're selecting, off-white is never of a true off-white. So if you want it to have a warmer tinge to it or a colder tinge to it, you have to sort of be making sure that when you're selecting those colours, you're picking them from the right palette in the first place. Yeah. And these are sort of like little nuances of stuff that if you don't get it right, you can end up with, you know, a room that suddenly looks lavender all day long, and you don't want that, you know.
There's a level of technical knowledge required here, I suppose, is where this comes in, isn't it? Because this isn't just about which direction you're pointing the light in. This comes down to the specific technicalities of that light over that light. How far down that rabbit hole is it possible to go for a person who designs kitchens?
It shouldn't be too difficult to find the information that you need. I think lighting has become much more technical than it had been before. Previously, we were specifying, you know, halogen products. It was perfect colour rendering. It was always the same colour. It was bright on full brightness, and then as you dimmed it down, it changed to a nice warm orangey glow. With LED, that's all gone. It's all, we're talking about lumens, we're talking about efficacy of the lights, different control gear. We've got drivers that need specific power. The dimming is totally different than what it was before. So although it's part of the interiors world and it's about decorating the room with light, actually there's a big technical element to it that wasn't necessarily there in the past.
And I think it's important to sort of say, as an interior designer, that you shouldn't have to feel restricted by your own knowledge. You defer to the likes of yourself, you know, as an expert in the field. And we do that all the time. When we're designing, you know, the full of interior, you want to make sure that when you're sourcing every product in there, that you're talking to your supplier, that you're finding out the knowledge, you're asking the right questions. And we kind of do that for our developers. We're doing it on their behalf. We're making sure that the product that we're picking isn't just, it's not about it just looking nice. It needs to be fit for purpose. It needs to have longevity within the scheme. It needs to, I mean, we have to think about things like supply and, you know, products not being discontinued, all of those sorts of things. But when you have something that's become quite technical like that, it's like, ask the right questions, speak to the supplier and make sure that they're giving you all of that information, so that when you are making that right choice or that specific choice, you can also then pass on that knowledge to your developer, and hopefully they embrace that information and make the right decision at the end of the day.
Another technical one was the colour temperature. And everyone's sort of familiar with cool white and warm white, but actually these terms don't mean much
anything
at all. So you could be specifying all your downlights from one company as warm white, and then you can go to the kitchen company and say, right, can you supply some undercover lights for me? I want warm white. They could be totally different in colour. And actually, you want them to match up as near as possible. So you would need to look at the Kelvins, and this is how we measure colour temperature. So for residential applications, usually we're looking at something from either 2400 up to 3000 Kelvin, depending on the warmth of the colour that you want. And typical would be 2700 Kelvin. And that's going to give you a nice, soft atmospheric light in the evening when it's mixed with table lamps. But then during the day, it doesn't appear too orange in contrast to the natural daylight, which is quite blue in colour. So it's quite important to get the balance right on that. And when specifying the light source, that we're looking at the Kelvin for the colour temperature.
I think one of the things that's brought lighting much more to the fore in kitchens is the fact that everything is now so open plan. And so the use of that room changes so much during the day that the lighting has to reflect it. And it's not just about cooking, it's also, it becomes your living area, your TV watching area, your doing your homework area. I'm wondering how much the smart home element of things has affected that. You know, you're no longer walking through and flick a switch, you now have to control all these different lights all in one go. Is that moving everything forward a bit more? Is that raising the awareness of it a little bit? People could control it with their phone or their iPad or whatever.
I think the technology is definitely advancing, and we're, you know, we're getting into the realms of Bluetooth technology, things like that. But just the very fact that these are open plan spaces has changed and almost forced the technology to move forward, and more people are now adopting it, which is bringing the price down a little bit. But essentially, if you've got a kitchen, dining, living room, you've got three different rooms there. It wouldn't be absurd to have three or four switches in one room, and once you've got three rooms all built into one, you know, it's not beyond the realms of possibility that you would have 12 circuits in that space. And you don't want 12 dimmers on the wall, because you're never going to remember which dimmer does what. You're going to have to come in, turn them all on, dim them all down individually to create your perfect scene. And then when you go out, you've got to turn them off, and you're starting to turn on lights which were off, and it becomes a total muddle, and you don't want labels on there either. So these scene setting systems are so useful, because you move from 12 dimmers to four switches on the wall. And each switch or each of those buttons has a different mood. So you come in and you press cooking scene and you have quite a bright scene, or you have a dining scene where the focus becomes around the dining table and then you dim down the other areas, and then you have an all off button, so it turns everything off in one switch, so it's really adding to your convenience. Do you have those systems in mind?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that when we're designing, again, because we're designing for the developer to sell onto an end user, we have to be really careful about being too prescriptive up front. And also, we can be designing 2 years before the units are actually going out onto sale. So the way, the speed that the technology is changing, you can end up doing something that could almost be old hat by the time that you actually launch the site. So we have to be really careful to try and future-proof whatever we're specifying. Sometimes, and I think actually the way things are going now, it's kind of made it a little bit easier, because sort of back in the day, you had to have everything wired in. If you wanted it, you had to have it built into the design really far in advance. But because of the wireless and the Bluetooth and the options to be able to do that now, you actually don't have to have that technology physically built into the wall as much anymore. So, I mean, am I right in thinking you can even get light bulbs that you can use wirelessly, that you can literally control the bulbs themselves from your phone?
At the moment, but yes.
But they're coming in. And I think those are the sorts of things where you can then create, you can actually, you know, decide yourself which lights come on at what time. You can create your own sort of scene setting, as you've said.
But with all of these things, simplicity is
absolutely because people won't use it. Yeah, if it becomes too complicated, people just go, actually, do you know what, I'd just rather just have a switch that I just hate
this on. I guess voice control is a big part of that as well, isn't it? You can just ask Alexa, or
you can and they can do it, or it's all connected through.
But I'm wondering whether you as a designer feel that you have to be constantly expanding your technical knowledge of these things, because if your clients will say to you, well, can this work like this?
Absolutely, and they often ask our advice on it. And I think, you know, we have a responsibility to be aware of the new things that are coming out. But like I say, I think what we tend to do is defer to the specialists and actually have those conversations. And I think as long as you build up, as a design agency, as long as you build up really good, reliable suppliers, they become your resource in the same way that we become the resource to the developer. And it just sort of funnels through us in one way so that we can consider all of the different aspects that we have to look at the same time. But yeah, I mean, you know, you are a lighting specialist. That's what you do. And therefore, your knowledge is always going to be greater than ours, because we're looking at multiple different things. But it's great to have people like yourself that we can then ask these questions and find out what's the best thing to be doing.
We do the same with our suppliers as well.
Yeah.
You know, they teach us and then we try and teach other people.
Yeah.
So we do some CPDs for interior designers and architects so they can come and learn, or even just the general public as well. You know, we want to teach people about how to use lighting, what makes good lighting design, so that they pick up on that, and you know, we see better lighting in people's homes at the end of the day. It is about education, and we're definitely there to help and answer questions for anyone.
And let's move on to the bathroom here, because it is a completely different set of needs, isn't it? The way that, I mean, a lot of the principles are the same, but so the same question applies now, Luke, is what do people do wrong when they are designing their bathroom lighting?
A lot of people see the bathroom as a place to get ready in the morning. They want bright, invigorating lighting that's going to wake them up. But actually, it needs to be multi-purpose. In the evening, the bathroom should transform and it should become a sanctuary. It should become spa-like. So you don't want just down lights or bright mirror lights. Again, everything should be dimmable. And you want that extra layer of lighting, which gives you, you know, a wow factor. It could be up lights behind a bath. It could be, you know, a low-level light underneath a vanity unit to give a floating effect. A floor washer that comes on automatically on a sensor as you walk into the space, but something which can change the atmosphere within that room to create a different mood.
Now, is there as big a driver to spend the money on lighting in the bathroom as there is in the kitchen? It's not quite as
well. Weirdly, I almost think it's kind of an area where you can be way more dramatic and interesting in a bathroom, because it's a closed off space. It's a room where you shut the door behind you and you have this in this small environment which doesn't have to share a space with the dining room or a living room, or this big expanse where you lose a lot of light. So actually, if you've considered it and it's been built in early enough, then it can be really impactful, and it's probably one of the easier places than the kitchen really to actually have that impact in there. But again, it can be seen as a bit of an afterthought, and if you haven't built it into the design, it's quite hard to do it. But you know, like you said, if you can put a recessed plinth along the edge of your bath, you can get a lovely lighting wash across the floor. That's then a perfect option to have as your sort of subtle light, that when you come in you've lit the floor, so it's a safe, you know, you can see what you're doing, but it's a nice, it's not in your eyes, it's not sort of impact on you at that sort of late at
you've
night
got
or in the
good
or
when
in the
you
night.
Look in the mirror as well,
yes,
you?
Yes. Well, this is it. And actually, you know,
you can get a light for that, can you?
You can't.
It's a magic light. But no, I mean, you often find that you go to bars or restaurants and stuff, you go to their toilets in the evening, you can't see, you can hardly see yourself in a lot of those, and they do that on purpose, I think. But
you're sure that isn't the booze, Helen?
That might be a bit of that, but. At home, obviously, when you are wanting to get ready to go out, you want to make sure that you're getting accurate lighting. You don't want a big wash of light on one side and you realise that you've made up half your face, you look like a ghoul, and the other half you look okay. I mean, we constantly have a battle with our clients that, you know, you don't have to make them big, bright boxes. You know, that actually it is about how you light it, and we say that all the time.
Even just with your downlights.
Yeah.
It can be quite simple. Because say you had two downlights over your shower enclosure, and they're sort of centred in the middle of that, just put them against the wall so they skim down the tiles. You're highlighting the sort of texture of the tile, you're creating a dramatic feature, you actually make the space feel brighter and don't get glare when you're in
when
the shower.
You're, yeah.
So it's just simple positioning like that which can make a really big impact.
Often in the sort of spaces we're looking at, they can be quite small and quite confined. You don't often have natural light in them. Mm-hmm. But in a weird way, because you don't have that, again, you can really control what the lighting's doing because you don't have like an outside impact on it. But I mean, we say to people, you can have black tiling floor to ceiling in a bathroom. If you light it well, you'll still get the right functions in there. And but if you don't, that's when they become little dark pits. So you have to be really careful what you do. I think one of the challenges I find with bathroom lighting, and it might be slightly different in your sector because it often comes down to budget, is trying to use feature lighting in a bathroom that does have a bit of individuality or a bit of a uniqueness to it. Because I think there's so many restrictions, obviously, in a wet room, what type of lighting you can use. You have to think about the zoning of it and where you can use certain lights. And because of that, they have to be these sort of encapsulated products. I think the design within that field, it feels like there's quite a big scope to be able to sort of expand on what the options are. You do often quite often get the sort of tubular opal glass with the chrome base, you know, that sits either side of your mirror. And if you go on Pinterest and you look at bathroom lighting, you see all these wonderful things, but of course they're not necessarily, you know,
legal.
The right IP rating. And then it's quite hard to achieve
them. They'll probably kill you.
Yeah. I mean, you can have, you know, pendants and stuff hanging around your sink area as long as they're far enough away, but then they can't be too close to where the shower is. You've got to check your zones. But,
So there's a designer highlighting a gap in the market there, Luke. Is she right? Is there just isn't the choice to have that, the level of interior design that Helen's looking for because of the technical limitations of
at the right price, which is the key thing. And like I say, that might be different for you because of the prices that we're often looking at. But
around the vanity area, you tend to find like frosted tubes and, you know, like you said, little capsule things.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't always have to use an IP-rated fitting, so it's definitely worth checking the zones that you're working in and seeing what you could specify differently. But I'm quite keen as well to, you know, try to incorporate some concealed lighting to provide those benefits. So, for example, a mirror, ideally you want a light either side of the face, but you can do, you know, effect by simply having a very basic mirror floating off the wall slightly and then having an LED tape behind it. It reflects off the wall behind and then comes back at your face, which provides a really soft lighting effect, but also we can link it into the controls then, so it can become dimmable. We can make sure you specify a colour which matches in with the rest of the room. Because you can get those mirrors with integrated lighting, can't you? But actually, you can't control them from the door. They're different colour temperatures most of the time, and they're not dimmable. So they can be a bit difficult sometimes to incorporate into a lighting scheme, because either they're on or they're off. And
there's a kind of safety element to the bathroom lighting as well, isn't there? Particularly, there's such a focus at the moment about multi-generational living, people staying in their homes for much longer. And I think lighting has a really key role to play in the way that people can be safe in those environments. Rather than having a light that goes on and off, as you say, lighting can be part of the process of helping them use that space safely, regardless of age or physical ability as well.
It needs to be adaptable for different uses, different people as well. A lot of our clients have like a little granny annex, or a guest annex as well, and you'll have people using that space who are not familiar with it. So that night light feature is really useful, because as soon as they walk in, they've got some light. They don't have to fumble for a light switch or anything like that. It comes on automatically, gives them enough light to get to the loo and get back out without tripping over or anything, and without having the bright down lights on, you know, waking you up in the middle of the night.
We will draw this to a conclusion again, Helen, by talking about money here. Is lighting one of the things that gets taken away?
Yeah, to be honest, it is. I mean, don't get me wrong, we would always like to build it in, but we have to justify the use of anything that we put into a scheme. And you have to make sure that what you're putting in, there's a reason why it's there. Now, obviously, task lighting is essential, so it tends to be the more atmospheric or feature lighting that potentially would get built out of a scheme if the budgets were getting a little bit tight. But, you know, I think even if you're using your task lighting, it's about using it in a way that, like you said, don't necessarily have to have a wash of downlights across your ceiling. Choosing where you position those downlights can make a massive impact. So you're actually using the same product at the same price, you're just putting them in the right place, and that in itself is part of the whole design that you're doing. And we love, you know, when we, like I said, I think when we get to things like concierge areas, one-off spaces, gyms, residence lounges, all those sorts of things, then actually that lighting becomes a big part of the design and the aesthetic, because it can create such impact. You know, it really is the thing that can make or break a design at the end of the day. If you have done a beautiful interior but you haven't lit it well, it can either be completely lost in a huge wash of expansive light that you lose all of your textures and all of your details, or it can actually be lit really dimly to the point where you just don't see all of those lovely features that you've built in. So it's always going to be a consideration no matter what budget you have, but obviously you have to be making sure that you make the most of the budget that you have, and sometimes those little things don't always get right there to the end of the project, but we always push for them.
Yeah, I think it can add or take away value from a project.
Absolutely,
if you get it right, then you're really enhancing the interiors and you're showing them off, you know, in their best light, excuse the pun. Or you can actually get it wrong, and what you're doing is taking away some of the time and money that you've spent on the interiors. Like we spoke about earlier with the colour rendering.
Yeah.
If you choose an amazing fabric and then go for a light source which renders it badly, then actually you're making that fabric look like a lower quality material, potentially.
Absolutely.
Or the space could feel dark and gloomy when actually it should feel bright and spacious.
You have to look at it as part of the design. And I think if we were designers that just got commissioned to just do your kitchen and just do your bathroom, you would still be integrating the lighting within that space, because it has to be the finishing touch of what you've done. And if you haven't considered those things and you just pick your materials for your kitchen and you just put them on a unit and stick them at the end of the room, and then the developer does their own thing with the lighting, unfortunately they won't necessarily benefit from the design that you've created, because you're not you haven't lit it correctly.
So I mean, you're our expert here, Luke. If I'm a kitchen or bathroom designer, what should I be looking out for? What's going to be, you know, in 5 years' time, what are we going to be having a conversation about?
I always hate those questions.
I just don't know. I mean, if you look back at what's changed in the past 5 or 10 years, I mean, the industry's gone on its head. I don't think that's going to happen again. But what you are seeing probably is an increase in the way things are getting smaller. So our downlights have been shrinking and shrinking and shrinking, and because the efficacy of the light source is getting higher, you're getting more light for less energy, and the space that it's requiring is much smaller as well. So that's probably a continuing trend. And the connectivity, things moving towards, you know, a wireless network. I don't think we're going to see any wholesale changes for another 5 to 10 years probably on that. Because people can be a bit slow to adapt onto those things, but definitely there are, you know, benefits from doing that. And I think just general price erosion as well, because LEDs are, you know, still fairly new emerging technology, and they're becoming much more commonplace because of various directives and you know, the lamp ban that we've got in place. So the quality is getting better and the price is coming down, so they're becoming, you know, much more affordable for clients and better, you know, quality for their interiors.
Yay. We like the sound of that.
It is a bit upsetting, because at the moment clients are paying 3 times more than what they paid before for something that's not naturally as good as what
Well, that's sometimes not because they're not as familiar with the ranges that are available, so you often refer back to the same thing that you use over and over again, and obviously that's the challenge.
So more variety for less cost.
That's, I would imagine. Wonderful, that's doesn't it? I like the sound of that.
That's the perfect place to finish. Thank you very much for your time, both of you. A big thanks to Luke Thomas from John Cullen Lighting and Helen Fuster from Suna for their time there. There's a lot of food for thought in there, I think. What's really clear to me is just how much a working knowledge of the latest lighting techniques and particularly technology is essential for any designer wanting to get the most out of their work. Now, if you want to let me know what you think about lighting design or indeed anything else you hear on any of these podcasts, you can email me directly on andrew@kbbreview.com and I'd really love to hear from you. Equally, please don't forget to subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts, as it means you won't miss any episodes, and please rate and review us too. See you next week for the last episode of 2019.
The Kitchen and Bathroom Design Podcast is brought to you with the support of our friends at KBB Birmingham 2020, the biggest kitchen and bathroom exhibition in the UK. It's on from March the 1st to March the 4th, 2020, and we'll be there recording live episodes for this very podcast every afternoon. You can register for your place at kbb.co.uk. See you there.